Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. Today we're talking books with Anne Meadows, commissioning editor at Granta and Portobello Books. Coming up, we'll discuss a quirky Japanese novel set in a second-hand shop in Tokyo, crack open an award-winning short work from Iceland, and meet Eileen, the title character of American author Otessa Moshfeghi's debut novel. All that coming up on the Monocle Arts Review right now. And welcome to the programme. We're going to begin with one of Portobello's latest releases, a Japanese book called The Nakano Thrift Shop by Hiromi Kawakami. What caught your attention about this book and when it came across your desk?
I read Hiromi Kawakami's first book, Strange Weather in Tokyo, a few years ago, and I just fell in love with it. And I remember reading the pages very slowly, and about five pages in, I got incredibly hungry. And she's so good at descriptions of food. That novel opens in a sake bar and they're ordering little bits of tapas and sushi and things, and edamame beans, and these mushrooms that she describes being covered in like this gentle wasabi paste, and it's delicious.
Mouth-watering.
And that book is a kind of strange love story between a woman in her late 30s who's very lonely, who meets this older man, and they've become very good friends, and then gradually she realizes she's in love. So when the Nakano thrift shop came in, I was very much prepared for another charming, sweet story of two strangers finding each other, which is what the Nakano thrift shop is. But it's also a story of Tokyo and a story of these little slices of Japanese history.
Fantastic. And who are these two characters who kind of come together, and where do they come together?
So it begins with Hitomi, who is working in a small thrift shop, a shop that sells odds and ends in the west of Tokyo. She's a young woman. She doesn't have a lot of direction in her life, and her days revolve around this job. And the thrift shop is owned by a man called Mr. Nakano, and he is a notorious womanizer. He has had five wives and is currently seeing another woman on the side. And he employs a young man called Takeo in his shop. And Takeo and Hitomi, they have this sort of pas de deux where he approaches her and then he withdraws, and he approaches her and then he withdraws. And she isn't quite sure of his affections, and she's not quite sure of her own feelings. And then as they do, or as characters do in Hiromi Kawakami's novels, they drink too much, they fall into bed, and then they fall out with each other. And the novel is Hitomi wondering how to get Takeo back.
Fascinating. Okay. And also, I guess the thrift shop allows for lots of different characters to come into the shop, and it presents a lot of, you know, snippets of different people. What do you think that device, I guess, bring to us as the reader?
I think it allows Kawakami to tell a range of stories that sort of echo one another. So a lot of the objects that come into the shop have something to do with love or lust or loss. There's a young man who brings this bowl that he believes his ex-girlfriend has cursed, and he can't work out how to get rid of it, and he's desperate for the thrift shop to take it. And of course they won't, and in the end the mistress sort of swoops in and saves the day. There's another man, an older man, who's slightly creepy, who brings in these erotic photographs that he's taken with his wife. So all these little stories come into play with these objects.
It's very nice, and it, I guess, you know, it's about the kind of the intricacies of the ordinary and how everyday items can contain a greater story. Do you think that's the moral of this story? If you were going to say that there's kind of one message that's behind it, is it the sort of actually to look for the bigger stories in small things?
Absolutely. It's about the enchanted periods in an everyday life. Hitomi is actually, we find out, looking back on this time and the time with Takeo and realizing how special it was and how strange it was. And there's a kind of sweet melancholy to this novel, I think, because of that, because this is a time that has passed.
Interesting. And obviously this is a translated text. You work a lot with translated books. How do you make a judgment as to what's going to be a hit when you receive a text that's in a foreign language?
Oh, it's very hard. With Strange Weather in Tokyo, it really was just love. And it ended up paying off. I mean, we've sold sort of 40,000 copies, and it was shortlisted for the Independent Foreign Fiction Prize. But it was very much word of mouth and building the author slowly. You know, bloggers fell in love with it, and then booksellers fell in love with it, and then reviews started to happen, and then this prize shortlisting. So really, you take a gamble. But I think that the sense Kawakami has of place and the way she describes Tokyo, really just these suburbs and then the mountains, makes you desperately want to be there, and it feels real and it feels contemporary. And I think that's where the enchantment lies.
And is there any food in this one?
There is food in this one. There are really great descriptions of food. It's not a book to read on a very hungry stomach.
The Nakano Thrift Shop by Hiromi Kawakami is out now, published by Portobello Books. Our next read takes us to Reykjavik. Moonstone, The Boy Who Never Was, is a short book by Icelandic writer Sjón. Set in 1918, it follows Manny Stein, a gay teenager in a society where homosexuality is not accepted. And what sort of view of Iceland at this time do we get here? And what journey does this book take us on?
It's a very strange view of Iceland. So this novel begins with the explosion of a volcano that covers Iceland in ash. And it's very cinematic and very dreamlike. And it only covers a few months of Icelandic history, but it's an incredibly tumultuous time. The volcano has exploded, or erupted, I should say. Spanish flu comes to the island and 500 or so Reykjavans are killed by the disease. And then Iceland declares independence from Denmark. So it's a really unusual period of history. But the portrayal that you get from the perspective of the central character, the boy, Manny Stein Carlson, who the novel is named after, he's the moonstone of the title. He is someone who is obsessed with the cinema. He's not quite a fantasist, but he's a 16-year-old boy. He's an orphan. He's selling sex on the streets of Reykjavik and has this very strange life where the films that he sees, the early movies, the movies of the 1910s, blend into his everyday life. So he's obsessed with this woman called Sola G, who's just a girl that goes to his school, but he sees her as a kind of femme fatale. So although you do get an intense portrait of Iceland at this time, it's not a vivid historical rendering. It's very subjective. It's very fantastical.
And you mentioned that the setting itself is quite cinematic and that opening. It also, as you said, looks at the kind of the emergence of cinema in Iceland. Do you think there's kind of a connection there between, you know, the fact that this is the birth of cinema on the island and the fact that we have this kind of incredibly cinematic setting?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think it's definitely deliberate on the part of the author. I think as well that by having these cinematic elements, it allows the author to talk about morality, because the cinema of the time is regarded, certainly in this novel, as an immoral force, and it brings all these people together in these theatres. And there's an extraordinary scene once the Spanish flu is hit, where the lights go up in a cinema in auditorium and the people look at each other and they realize that, you know, one in every three people is sick and that this is a site of contagion because it's a place where all of these people come and congregate.
And contagion often is a sign in books of a sort of moral contagion that, you know, is seeping into society. Do we have that here, or is it something maybe a little bit more, I guess, yeah, more obvious?
It's almost the opposite. So the moral contagion of the cinema is definitely not Manny's view. Like, he adores it. He adores film. But it's something that is put on the cinema by the sort of the more provincial people in the town or the more religious people in the town who believe that it's a corrupting influence. And that, in turn, feeds into how they see Manny's sexuality. And this is also a novel about homosexuality at the time and how it was taboo. And Manny, this place of fantasy he has in the cinema, it gets shut down and he gets shut down. So it's almost like the contagion it's a false equation within the book.
Interesting. Okay. And the author we mentioned, Sjón, is an Oscar-nominated songwriter who wrote for Lars von Trier's film Dancer in the Dark and who has also written for Björk. Does his other work come across in the writing here? I mean, is it quite poetic? Is it quite lyrical?
It's a beautifully, beautifully written novel. Every word is perfect. I mean, it makes sense that he was a lyricist. He also seems to be, like, just an incredibly cool guy. Like, Björk was one of his backing singers in a band in Iceland in the 1980s. I mean, I think he's sort of a literary rock star, I guess.
Fantastic. Moonstone, The Boy Who Never Was by Sjón is out now, published by Farah, Strauss and Giroux. Our final book for today is one of this year's Man Booker Longlist nominees, Eileen, the first novel by American author Otessa Moshfegh. The title character is a lonely and deeply troubled young woman working in a boys' prison outside Boston, and it's set in the 1960s. And perhaps you could just start by explaining how Moshfegh sets this scene, and then what happens to kick the plot off.
Eileen is a confession, I would say. It starts with a confession. It starts with Eileen saying, I wasn't the kind of girl who you would have noticed on the street, but within me was rage and fear and a killer instinct. And that's how she starts. And all the way through, there are these little hints that she's going to do something terrible. So really, this is a sort of noir about an ordinary woman or a seemingly ordinary woman in 1964. She has this pristine white gloves. She's very plain. You would never notice her, but she's leading this, like, incredibly sad and lonely life. And the novel takes place in the week that that life is transformed.
Okay. Can you let us in on the secret as what transforms it, or what starts the transformation?
I can. So it's a woman. It's a femme fatale. So Eileen works at this all-boys prison, and it's a miserable place, and she's very bored, and she's filled with loathing, and she despises her own body, and she despises the people around her. And she should be unpleasant company, but oddly she's not. She's very funny, and she's very sharp, and she's very perceptive on the ways in which society is teaching her to hate herself. And then one day, this incredibly beautiful flame-haired woman called Rebecca comes into the prison, and she's there to teach the boys or something. There's some far-fetched reason that she's turned up, but really she's kind of like an apparition. And Eileen is obsessed with her and besotted, and Rebecca gradually starts to sort of draw Eileen in, and they get drunk together, and then it becomes clear to the reader, and then eventually clear to Eileen, that Rebecca is going to use her in some way, that she's going to be the catalyst for a crime.
I see. And the story, we should say, is told from the point of view of a kind of older Eileen looking back on this time. How does Mochefet weave in this framing narrative? And is it? Do you think it's successful the way she does it?
I think without it, the novel would be kind of insane. I mean, it allows her to make Eileen into a kind of unreliable narrator. She's constantly saying, I remember this, I remember that. But the things she remembers are absurd, that like these tiny, tiny, tiny details that fit, you know, the novel is being narrated from 50 years hence. It's Eileen in her 70s talking about Eileen in her mid-20s, and there's no way she could remember like the particular pattern of snow on the ground, but she insists that she does, and you don't really believe her. And as I said, she's going to go on to commit this crime, and she's confessing, and she's telling you things. But it reminded me of the experience of reading something like Lolita. You're with a Humbert Humbert, you're with a murderer with a fancy prose style. This is someone who is twisting you and who is telling you a story in order to make you think well of them or to get their own ends, and you shouldn't trust them, and you don't trust them.
It might be just because I've just read this book, but I just read The Girls by Emma Klein, which is kind of supposed to be, you know, the summer's big hit. There seem to be a lot of unusual parallels between the two books. I mean, we've got an older woman looking back at her youth, a kind of another woman who she looks up to, but then becomes clear that there's a crime involved, and it's, we know from the very beginning that there is a crime involved. I mean, do you think, is that where the similarities end? Or do you think, you know, both these novels, they're both by very promising young female authors as well. Do you think they deserve comparison?
I think, for me personally, I've read The Girls. I think that Eileen is a far stronger and more interesting novel. I'd be interested to hear what you think. I think The Girls, it's very bleached, it's very sunwashed, it's kind of intoxicating, and you are waiting for this terrible thing to happen. But it's all about these women who don't really have any agency, they don't really have any intellectual or emotional engagement in the moment. And even, I think, the character in The Girls, as she looks back, she's still very isolated from herself and her body and from sexuality. She's still kind of this sun-bleached thing. And for me personally, Eileen is like a roller coaster, you know, it's like dark and fierce, and you're with her every step of the way, and you believe in her, and her psychology is so well painted. So for me, Eileen is the superior novel.
Eileen by Otessa Mochefet is out now, published by Penguin Press. And I'm afraid that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to my guest, Anne Meadows. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. My producer was Holly Fisher, and my researcher was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when we'll be talking films. But for now, thanks very much for listening, and goodbye.